RB-34's photoelectric eyes lifted from the book at the muffled sound of hinges turning, and he was upon his feet when Susan Calvin entered. She paused to readjust the huge no-entrance sign upon the door and then approached the robot. "I've brought you the texts upon hyperatomic motors, Herbie. A few, anyway. Would you care to look at them?" RB-34, otherwise known as Herbie, lifted the three heavy books from her arms and opened to the title page of one. Theory of Hyperatomics. He mumbled inarticulately to himself as he flipped the pages and then spoke with an abstracted air. "Sit down, Dr. Calvin. This will take me a few minutes." The psychologist seated herself and watched Herbie narrowly as he took a chair at the other side of the table and went through the three books systematically. At the end of half an hour, he put them down. "Of course, I know why you brought these." The corner of Dr. Calvin's lip twitched. "I was afraid you would. It's difficult to work with you, Herbie. You're always a step ahead of me." "It's the same with these books, you know, as with the others. They just don't interest me. There's nothing to your textbooks. Your science is just a mass of collected data plastered together by makeshift theory, and all so incredibly simple that it's scarcely worth bothering about. It's your fiction that interests me, your studies of the interplay of human motives and emotions." His mighty hand gestured vaguely as he sought the proper words. Dr. Calvin whispered, "I think I understand." "I see into minds, you see," the robot continued, "and you have no idea how complicated they are. I can't begin to understand everything because my own mind has so little in common with them. But I try, and your novels help." "Yes, but I'm afraid that after going through some of the harrowing emotional experiences of our present-day sentimental novel," there was a tinge of bitterness in her voice, "you find real minds like ours dull and colorless." "But I don't." The sudden energy in the response brought the other to her feet. She felt herself reddening and thought wildly, "He must know." Herbie subsided suddenly and muttered in a low voice from which the metallic timbre departed almost entirely, "But of course I know about it, Dr. Calvin. You think of it always. So how can I help but know?" Her face was hard. "Have you told anyone?" "Of course not." This with genuine surprise. "No one has asked me." "Well then," she flung out, "I suppose you think I am a fool." "No, it is a normal emotion." "Perhaps that is why it is so foolish." The wistfulness in her voice drowned out everything else. Some of the woman peered through the layer of doctorhood. "I am not what you would call attractive."
"If you are referring to mere physical attraction, I couldn't judge. But I know, in any case, that there are other types of attraction."
"Nor young."
Dr. Calvin had scarcely heard the robot.
"You are not yet 40.
An anxious insistence had crept into Herbie's voice. 38, as you count the years. A shriveled 60 as far as my emotional outlook on life is concerned. Am I a psychologist for nothing?" She drove on with bitter breathlessness. "And he is barely 35 and looks and acts younger. Do you suppose he ever sees me as anything but what I am?"
"You are wrong."
Herbie's steel fist struck the plastic-topped table with a strident clang.
"Listen to me."
But Susan Calvin whirled on him now, and the hunted pain in her eyes became a blaze.
"Why should I? What do you know about it all, anyway, you machine? I'm just a specimen to you, an interesting bug with a peculiar mind spread-eagled for inspection. It's a wonderful example of frustration, isn't it?
Almost as good as your books." Her voice, emerging in dry sobs, choked into silence. The robot cowered at the outburst.
He shook his head pleadingly. Won't you listen to me, please? I could help you, if you would let me.
How?
Her lips curled.
By giving me good advice?
No, not that. It's just that I know what other people think. Milton Ashe, for instance.
There was a long silence, and Susan Calvin's eyes dropped.
I don't want to know what he thinks, she gasped. Keep quiet.
I think you would want to know what he thinks.
Her head remained bent, but her breath came more quickly.
You are talking nonsense, she whispered.
Why should I? I am trying to help. Milton Ashe's thoughts of you.
He paused, and then the psychologist raised her head.
Well?
The robot said quietly,
he loves you.
For a full minute, Dr. Calvin did not speak. She merely stared. Then,
you are mistaken. You must be. Why should he?
But he does.
A thing like that cannot be hidden. Not from me.
But I am so...
She stammered to a halt.
He looks deeper than the skin and admires intellect in others.
Milton Ashe is not the type to marry a head of hair and a pair of eyes.
Susan Calvin found herself blinking rapidly and waited before speaking. Even then, her voice trembled. Yet he certainly never in any way indicated...
Have you ever given him a chance?
How could I? I never thought that...
Exactly. The psychologist paused in thought and then looked up suddenly.
A girl visited him here at the plant half a year ago.
She was pretty, I suppose. Blonde and slim. And, of course, could scarcely add two and two. He spent all day puffing out his chest, trying to explain how a robot was put together. The hardness had returned. Not that she understood. Who was she?
Herbie answered without hesitation, I know the person you are referring to.
She is his first cousin, and there is no romantic interest there, I assure you.
Susan Calvin rose to her feet with a vivacity almost girlish.
Oh, isn't that strange? That's exactly what I used to pretend to myself sometimes, though I never really thought so. Then it all must be true.
She ran to Herbie and seized his cold, heavy hand in both hers.
Thank you, Herbie.
Her voice was an urgent, husky whisper.
Don't tell anyone about this. Let it be our secret. And thank you again.
With that, and a convulsive squeeze of Herbie's unresponsive metal fingers, she left. Herbie turned slowly to his neglected novel, but there was no one to read his thoughts.